We will discuss police shootings and protests and politics and other top stories in the news during this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we also welcome the issue that's in the news that you want to discuss. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. As always, we have two guests with us from different perspectives. Our Week in Review guests today are Louis Fortas, Editor-in-Chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Van Mobley is with us. He is an Associate Professor of History and Economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin, President of the Village of Thiensville. He writes a regular column for the Ozaki News Graphic. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you both with us. Let's begin in Charlotte, North Carolina, where a black man, Keith Lamont Scott, was shot and killed by a black police officer on Tuesday. The incident touched off some violent protests, resulting in the shooting of another person who wound up dying yesterday. There was some looting. A state of emergency was declared. Last night, protests were peaceful. Louis, starting with you, what's your overall reaction to this police shooting and the related fallout?
I think this police shooting, like a lot of the other police shootings, is just the tip of the iceberg of a situation that's been going on for, you know, decades and decades. We need to work on issues in this country to deal with social justice, and we have to be a lot more serious about this. And it does cost money, and it is complicated, and it is not an there are no easy answers to this, but we have to deal with this, whether it's in Milwaukee or whether it's in Charlotte. And so what happens is when you have a community that's been felt like it's been held down, it doesn't have opportunities for good jobs, it doesn't have opportunities oftentimes for any decent job at all. And you know, something tips it off. There's a tipping point. It hits the boiling point, and all of a sudden you have this big reaction. So it isn't that something that just occurred and took off. I mean, this is something that's been brewing for a long, long time. And unless and until we seriously look at these social injustice problems we have, then We're going to continue to have these things. And the police, you know, you kind of feel sorry for them. They're on the front line. They're trying to do their job. And the community, you understand where they're coming from. I mean, you kind of can understand all the parts of it. And it's just a question of let's deal with the real root of the problem rather than sure, you have to calm the situation if you have, a violent uprising.
Yeah. Now
but other than that, let's deal with the issues.
Yeah. In this particular case, the family says that Keith Lamont Scott was waiting for his son to get out of school and had a book with him. The police say he had a gun with him. The protest last night had people chanting, "Release the video, release the video." Van, should we release the video? Is this something the public should see right now?
Well, the first thing that I would say, or I would suggest, is that, violence is not an acceptable form of protest. I don't think Louis said that as much, and I would agree with him on that. The second thing I would say on the releasing of the video, I always think on things like, in situations like this, for the police chief and the mayor in Charlotte, I certainly hope that they have a written policy in place so that they can follow that policy in such a scenario. And then it sort of takes a lot of the pushing and shoving out of it. You know, people, if you have a policy and you follow it in a methodical way, it's been my experience in local government that people will respect that if you've done it in the past and you do it in the future and you do it every time. So I'd encourage them to look at that. I suppose it'll come out whenever in their process it comes out, you know, and so we'll wait and see.
The Charlotte police chief said the video of the shooting won't be released to the public right now. But it will be shown to the victim's family. Apparently, he saw the video and said yesterday it does not definitively show the victim pointing a gun at anybody. Lewis, what about that?
Well, I think the situation is when you have video, and you should maybe have multiple videos in this case because there were multiple officers there. You're going to look at the video. You're either going to see that it's going to very clearly show that he had a gun, or it's going to very clearly show he didn't have a gun, or it's going to be ambiguous. Whatever the case may be, I mean, if it's ambiguous, you're going to be in a better situation than having the public thinking that it was clearly showing that he did not have a gun. So, and if he did not have a gun, then there's a serious problem on the other side, on the police side. So I think the quicker they can get that video out, people have a right to know what's going on, and people have a right to see the video.
Yeah, and let's move to Tulsa, and we'll go into more details as we go along. Officer Betty Shelby was charged with manslaughter in the fatal shooting of an unarmed black man after his SUV broke down last week. The criminal complaint said her fear resulted in her unreasonable actions, which led to the shooting. She's accused of unlawfully and unnecessarily shooting Terrence Crutcher after he did not comply with her lawful orders. The officer was released from jail after posting bond this morning. We all saw the video of that, or at least many of us saw the video of that, showing Terrence Crutcher, for the most part, walking to his car with his hands raised. Van Mobley, what are your general thoughts on this case?
My general thoughts are that, I believe in the American system. I believe in local government. I believe that the police do a good job, so do the prosecutors. And I actually am a village president, so I have respect for the jurisdiction of my peers, and in this case, the process is running, and I think that they will arrive at a just verdict.
Mm-hmm. And your thoughts on this, Lewis?
I think the video camera in this case was very important, and I think it is going to give the prosecution a very strong case, and I'm very anxious to hear what the defense has to say.
Yeah. This is the Week in Review. We are talking with Lewis Fortas and Van Mobley. We welcome your questions and views about the top stories in the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. John in Oconomowoc is with us. Hi, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I don't want to what if the question here, and the shooting of the man walking towards his car with his hands up, I don't believe that she should have shot when she did, and there was a taser deployment at the same time. I believe the taser deployment was completely justified due to the noncompliance, but if the man makes it to his vehicle and opens the door and gets the opportunity to reach into that vehicle, does it change anyone's opinion on whether the shooting was just or not?
Well, I'm not sure we can really try the case here, but Van Mobley, your thoughts on that he did not comply with orders to whatever stop. He kept on walking toward his car.
These are fine distinctions. Nobody in retrospect is happy with what occurred. And, I'm content to leave it to the judge, jury, prosecution, and defense teams in Oklahoma.
Lewis?
I think the Oklahoma authorities are acting quite responsibly on this one, and they're not trying to duck the situation. They're trying to deal with it. So I think they're doing a much better job than they're doing in Charlotte.
You know, the presidential candidates...
On that one, I would agree with Lewis on that one. They are doing a much better job. In Charlotte, they seem to have difficulty staying on the same page with one another. I'll just give you a couple examples, and I don't want to criticize them too much because I know they're under a lot of pressure. But last night, they called for a curfew, and then the police didn't enforce it. And if they weren't going to enforce it, they maybe shouldn't have called for it. Or it just seems that they're kind of trying to work things out. But I don't want to, you know, rush to judgment on them either. They're under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, Donald Trump said the country needs a combination of law and order and leadership to help prevent instances like the one in Charlotte. And he said, right now, we don't have that leadership. He also talked about bringing back a stop and frisk, but then he walked those comments back a little bit. Is he right, Van Mobley? Do we need some tougher law and order in this situation?
Well, we certainly need law and order, but part of Donald Trump's message is that these communities have been forgotten and left behind, and they do need we need more work on making sure that there are opportunities available. And he proposes policies that will make opportunities more available, trade adjustments. It's really people on the lower end of the scale that have suffered from a lot of the trade deals that we've made over the last 20 or 30 years. Donald Trump recognizes that. He's reaching out to the African American community in particular, but he's also reaching out to the white community. There, a lot of this is economic and it's not racial. Some of the problems, he's reaching out. He's trying to put in place policies that I think will be successful in addressing some of these issues. But we got to have law and order.
Hillary Clinton weighed in on the shooting deaths in both Charlotte and Tulsa, saying that these kinds of police killings are unbearable and need to become intolerable. She didn't explicitly point the finger at police. Rather, she praised them for their response to the terrorist bombings in New York and a stabbing rampage in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And we'll talk about those a little bit later. Lewis, with regard to the police shootings, your response to what Hillary Clinton had to say, and what do you think needs to happen?
First of all, let me take a step back. You were talking about Trump saying that we need law and order and leadership. Who's going to argue with that? And I think that Van is more hopeful than I think anybody I've been talking to about Donald Trump's views of what he would do and how he would do it and all. He's going to go back to the stop and frisk, which that was his first reaction. He still held on to it. He didn't totally kind of walk away from that. And that has been a disaster, to use his language, an absolute disaster. The mayor of New York, a retired police chief of New York, both said that when they got rid of the stop and frisk, crime actually went down. When the people like Trump were saying, you know, it's going to go up and it's going to, all these terrible things are going to happen, the exact opposite happened. So the problem that you have with it, Donald Trump talking about, you know, what he's going to do in that, none of it's based on fact. This is a guy that has never paid attention to policy, and he has no idea how, you know, much of this works. And so I think that you do need leadership. He's just the wrong leadership.
Yeah. On that, could I make respond to that a little bit on the stop and frisk? The policy of stop and frisk, my understanding of it, it was in place with Giuliani and Bratton, or maybe some of his others. And then secondly, Bloomberg continued it. And Bloomberg did it throughout his term, and then de Blasio has moved away from it. All I would say is it is a something that has been helpful in the past in bringing down some rates. And it's something that we should discuss, whether it's a good idea or not. I tend to be with Donald Trump. I think it may be a good idea. But I also would say what Donald Trump says is that, you know, policing decisions are the purview of mayors and common councils and local police forces. And Donald Trump has not said anything about, you know, moving away from local control of those issues.
What is your reaction to Hillary Clinton, and it's Van Mobley, to her saying that these killings, police shootings, are unbearable and need to become intolerable?
Well, I don't know what that really means. Of course, nobody is for any loss of life. Yes, we always want to constantly improve our system in ways that make these terrible things, you know, less frequent.
Let me take a break, and then we have callers, and then we'll go on to some other issues as well. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Van Mobley. This is Van Mobley's Week in Review debut, by the way. He has been with us talking about issues over the years, but this is his first time on The Week in Review. He is an associate professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. And also with us is Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests during this edition of our Week in Review. Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, and Van Mobley, an associate professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Right now we are talking about the fatal police shootings of black men in Charlotte and Tulsa and the responses and reactions to that. Adam in Platteville is with us. Hi, Adam.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
The reason I'm calling is I wanted to let you know the difference between why Stop and Frisk had fried meat freeze after it was removed compared to why it was so high when it was there is what it gets down to is people that are stopped and frisked, more people when that happens are caught committing a crime because they are being stopped and frisked. When you remove that, you're removing all of the petty crimes that people are getting caught for and leaving only the violent crimes. Stop and frisk decreased the amount of violent crimes that existed while increasing the amount of petty crimes or smaller crimes people were being caught for. So the idea that stop and frisk in and of itself was failed because it decreased in crime, or crime decreased when you got rid of it. Well, it only decreased because now you're not looking for it. It doesn't mean the crime wasn't happening, it just means now you're not able to find it.
By the way, I should add that Donald Trump was asked about this in a town hall event, what to do about violence in the black community. He proposed expanding stop and frisk, but then later said he was referring specifically to Chicago. What about Van Mobley? What about what our caller just said?
I think that he makes a good point, and that's an argument for stop and frisk. I mean, you know, I think reasonable people can agree on both sides of this issue, and I lean more towards the stop and frisk may be good in certain times in certain places.
Anything further on that, Louis?
Yeah, a lot of it. Who are you going to stop and who are you going to frisk? And, you know, we do have civil liberties in this country, at least we do right now. And you had a situation where, sure, if you start stopping every car, you're going to find, or every person, you're going to find some problems. But for the number of people, and it was like 700,000 in a year or something like that, the amount of arrests that took place were quite insignificant. But there, you know, what that did is a lot of damage to the community police relationship where, you know, you're going down the street. And I grew up in a neighborhood in Chicago where more my older brother than myself would get stopped and frisked, and the car would get searched, and, you know, for absolutely no reason other than he was a young kid. He was a 16-year-old driving a car in the central city of Chicago. And, you know, it never developed into any kind of big deal, but, you know, it could have under different circumstances. If he would have had something in the car, or if he would have been with some friends that, you know, were smarting off or whatever the case may be. But he, in all those cases, nothing was ever done. He did nothing wrong, and they, you know, just detained him. They frisked the car. They searched the car. They frisked him. That's not right. That's not America. And so I think it's a terrible idea, and I think, you know, the big question is, if you're going to have this stop and frisk, and let me ask Van, who are you going to stop and who are you going to frisk? It isn't going to be you or me, Van.
Well, Louis, you know, as I pointed out, this is something that, you know, local officials have done in the past, and there's an argument about whether it works or not in certain areas, and also the parameters under which they establish the guidelines for who they're going to stop. You know, these are things of local control, so, you know, in the abstract, I don't know, and I'm not really, you know, I'd have to sit around and think about it.
Let me get you both to respond to this. Donald Trump subtly pinned the blame for the turmoil in Charlotte, North Carolina, on President Obama, suggesting that the violent protests are highlight the racial divide in America that Obama has failed to mend as president. Trump said it seems that there's a lack of spirit between the white and the black. He said, I mean, it's a terrible thing that we're witnessing. You're seeing it. I'm seeing it. And he goes on to, again, say that President Obama has failed to mend this racial divide as president. What's your reaction to that, Lewis?
I think it's silly talk. I mean, he's the same guy that after 5 years of promoting this birther issue finally comes out and says, okay, Obama was born in the United States. But Hillary was the one who started the birther issue. I mean, this guy is delusional. I mean, and he has, unfortunately, some followers that whatever he says, they believe. And as Trump was very clear about that. He says, I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and people would, you know, still support me. And that's the problem. He gets up there, he says whatever he wants to say, and I fault the press for not doing a very good job of holding him accountable and of fact-checking.
Ben?
I think that whenever Trump was talking about shooting people, and he was being facetious, and, you know, maybe that's one of the things that he'll have to learn about, you know, to be maybe a little more temperate about what he, kind of how he jokes. And the second thing that I would say is Hillary did start it. I mean, her camp, people in her campaign, and I know that they fired the little volunteer out in Iowa, but, you know, there's still the story, very credible, that Sid Blumenthal was certainly shopping that story around, and Sid Blumenthal is one of his Hillary's confidants. So that's, you know, I think that's factual.
31 people were wounded in a New York City neighborhood when a bomb went off over the weekend. A 28-year-old naturalized U.S. citizen was arrested and charged this week in connection with that attack. There was also a mass stabbing at a mall in St. Cloud, Minnesota on Saturday in which 9 people were injured. The 22-year-old suspect was shot and killed by an off-duty police officer. Donald Trump said that it is time for police to racially profile people. He didn't elaborate on what attributes he would encourage the profiling, but said that we have no choice and that political correctness is only making things worse. Let's start with Van on that suggestion in light of those attacks.
Well, my understanding was that the racial profiling, the word racial was actually added by CNN and was not in his comments. He did say that they should profile, which is you look for certain people with certain characteristics that maybe would lead you to think that maybe they're involved in terroristic activity. And I think if your parameters are good and they're constitutional and you're not, you know, singling people out for things that they shouldn't be singled out for, then certainly why not? Why wouldn't you sort of try to identify the people and go after them? The second thing is I would just say, these are, in this case, I think that the bombing, particularly in New York, while they've done the locals have done a good job in rounding them up pretty fast, and I would commend them on that, you know, the federal government failed once again. The man's father turned him in as being a terrorist, and they just kind of let it drop through the cracks. I mean, we can't do that anymore.
Lewis?
Well, first of all, to Van's point about he didn't say racial and CNN or whatever added that. Yeah, you think after he's condemning Mexican Americans, he's condemning Muslims, that when he talks about profiling, you do have a sense you don't have to be, you know, a rocket scientist to figure out that he's probably dealing with racial profiling. But if it isn't racial or ethnic or whatever profiling, I'm curious what characteristics we're talking about. Are we talking about age? Are we talking about gender? How do you profile legally And I'd like to just toss that question back to Van in a second. But the other issue is, yeah, the father came to the police, the FBI, and said, my son is a terrorist or whatever. And they did investigate, and they didn't follow that up. And that was probably, in retrospect, a huge mistake. I don't know, you know, what went on in that follow-up, what kind of investigation they did of this fellow, but they didn't, you know, pursue it. And I don't have information for that, only what I read. But that does not look good. But again, it's a tough thing when you're dealing with these lone wolves and when you're dealing with people that are not part of a group, that are not connected to a group and are just going to, you know, read things and get radicalized and decide on their own they're going to change the world by doing something like that. That's hard to stop.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with Louis Fortas, who is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, and Van Mobley, an associate professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you would like to bring up an issue in the news this week or comment on the issues that we are discussing. Let's move on now to the latest Marquette University Law School poll, which was released on Wednesday. Hillary Clinton leads Donald Trump among likely voters, 44% to 42%. Just a very slight edge. She had a 45-42 last month. Van, you are the Trump supporter in the room. How do you feel about where this race is right now?
I feel very good about it. I think I've been saying for a while now, I think, you know, three of the most critical battleground states that I'm interested in because I live among them are the upper Midwest, where you've got Iowa and Wisconsin and Michigan. Those traditionally vote Democratic, and I think that certainly Donald's going to get one of those states. I think probably he's going to get two, and he might get all three. I think he's in striking distance. They haven't really, neither campaign has really been campaigning a whole lot in Wisconsin. I think the momentum coming out of Iowa is with Donald Trump, and I think that he's going to carry the state.
What do you think, Lewis?
I agree. I think he could take Iowa. I think I'm shocked that they're not fighting for Wisconsin a lot more than they are. I mean, they're doing very little in Wisconsin. I think Hillary is ahead. She's been consistently ahead, but she isn't ahead by very much. And for those who are big Hillary supporters, just because the state has a blue, you know, kind of color when they do the maps, don't think that it's all over. And if you're a Hillary supporter, get out there and do something. But Michigan is going to be very, very interesting, and that's a big one because that has a lot more electoral votes. And so I'm not sure on that one. The ones that have gone Trump's way, as we know recently, the big ones have been Ohio and Florida. And he needs more than that. He needs another big one and maybe one little one. And so it's, This is going to be a much closer race than a lot of people thought.
Yeah, in a video conference call with supporters in Nevada, Clinton raised a question that is on a lot of people's minds, and here's what she had to say about the polls.
Why aren't I 50 points ahead, you might ask? Well, the choice for working families has never been clearer. I need your help to get Donald Trump's record out to everybody. Nobody should be fooled. He proudly declared himself 100% right to work. He even hired a union-busting firm to break up an organizing campaign at his hotel in Las Vegas, where you are right now.
All right, starting with Lewis. So why isn't she 50 points ahead, and do you think her reason is the answer?
I think there's a lot of different reasons. That's certainly one of them. I think the media, again, has done a poor job of holding him accountable. I think they've kind of given up in terms of trying to hold him accountable. I think that
there's a lot of anger out there. There's a lot of unhappy people, and he's kind of playing into a lot of biases that people have. I think there are people that don't like Hillary Clinton, which is really an interesting thing. When Hillary left as Secretary of State, she had a 62% favorability rating. And then you had the very interesting and entertaining Republican debates that had 17 people on the stage. And if you wanted to get, if you didn't like the question or you didn't understand the question or the question was difficult, all you had, and you, for any of the contestants in the Republican debate, all you had to do was take a cheap shot at Hillary. You said, oh, Hillary's a disaster and we can't have Hillary anymore. And I remember Rubio, that was like his first response in almost every question. And after all of that attacking, and, you know, Hillary's a liar and Hillary's this, you know, it sticks to some, you know, to some extent. You can't have that repeated over and over without it being questioned by the media. So I think there's a lot of different things going on that are hurting. I think there's also, you know, people that, you know, are going to vote Republican, you know, like Paul Ryan, for example. He's going to be Republican. He talks about all the disagreements he has with Trump. He talks about the character issues with Trump, but yet he's still going to support Trump. This is one of the few times I'm going to, you know, say this, but Charlie Sykes has come through and shown that he does have some integrity and that he is holding tight to his Never Trump, and he's saying, you know, this is over the top. You know, I may be a conservative Republican, but this is ridiculous. And for that, I really respect him for that, because I'm sure he's getting a lot of pressure.
Van, we're going to get to you in a second, but first let's hear what Donald Trump had to say as to why Hillary Clinton isn't 50 points ahead.
Because she's terrible. I mean, she's had a terrible record. Everything she touches is bad. You look at what's going on with Libya, and you look at the surge, and you look at all of her decisions, and you look at the Iran deal, which is one of the dumbest deals I've ever seen, which she started. And she totally backs, by the way. I mean, in its completed form, she totally backs. You look at everything she touched. I mean, it's just a mess.
Anything you want to add to that, Van?
Well, no, I would support what Mr. Trump said. And particularly on the foreign policy, she's associated with a foreign policy strain in American politics that has adherents in both the Republican and the Democratic Party. The Democrats, you call them liberal interventionists. The Republicans, you call them neocons. They made a mess in the world, and they don't want to give up power. I frankly, on this one, I oftentimes feel sorry for Obama. A lot of times, he has to struggle with them. He has trouble keeping his own administration in line because they're always, you know, seem to not want to do what he says sometimes. So I would say, yep, she's a disaster in foreign policy. And then I would also say, on another issue that's near and dear to my heart, and I think to many union voters out there in Wisconsin, she's weak on trade. She was going to say one thing and do another on trade. The Clintons always do that. And on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I don't know why the Democrats still have Obama rattling on around that about that, because it doesn't do them any good electorally.
Well, one person who is throwing his support behind Hillary Clinton, reportedly, is former Republican President George H.W. Bush. That's according to Kathleen Hardington Kennedy Townsend, the former lieutenant governor of Maryland and daughter of the late Robert F. Kennedy. She claims Bush told her of his plans to vote for Clinton through a Bush spokesperson, though a Bush spokesperson said he will cast a private ballot and is not commenting. What do you make of that, Van, first, on Republican George H.W. Bush voting for Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think the only Bush that's likely to face the voters again is one of the younger ones, the younger members of the Klan down in Texas. He's the agricultural commissioner or whatever. He's endorsed Donald Trump, so that's what I think. I wish that the Bushes would be more vigorous in their support of Donald Trump. The Republican Party has been good to them. We all have to make our decisions, and I think that the younger Bush has made the correct decision.
Mm-hmm. Louis, what do you make of President Bush voting for Hillary Clinton?
First of all, it was real clear he didn't deny that he said that. So that's that kind of says it right there. But I want to go back to one thing that Van said. you know, Hillary's foreign policy was, you know, he agreed that it was a disaster or whatever. If that was the case, why did she leave with a 62% before she entered the race, before, you know, she got into the contest for president? Her popularity was 62%. People overwhelmingly approved of how she served as Secretary of State. She was popular, and she was viewed as, correctly so, I think, having done a very good job in a very, very difficult job. And Van is also right in this case that saying that both Democrats and Republicans in the foreign policy world think that how she proceeded was pretty good to very good. And Van is saying that, you know, that's kind of this group of both the establishment Democrats and the establishment Republicans on foreign policy, and they agree. And they do agree. And so I think the kind of the Trump approach is such an outlier that, you know, the rest of the world is appalled that United States of America could have a major party nominate someone like Donald Trump when it comes to foreign policy. So I think Hillary did a good job. I think Hillary's been pummeled by all the people that were running for president on the Republican ticket and from a lot of the right-wing media. But when she wasn't looking to run for president, she and people could look at what she had done in a objective way, people were very pleased.
President Obama said over the weekend in a very fiery speech before the Congressional Black Caucus that if African-American voters don't turn out to vote for Clinton, he would consider it a personal insult. He says that all the progress that the country has made over the last 8 years is on the line. Donald Trump has been trying to increase his appeal to black voters in recent weeks. Van, what do you make of, do you think that Trump can take away enough black support from Hillary Clinton?
I think he's working for it, and I think that, yes, he will get some African-American support, and I think that in that he's going to be elected. In retrospect, the ones who vote for him will be very happy that he did, and those that didn't vote for him will wish they had, and then they'll vote for him again, and they'll vote for him in 4 years. The other thing that I would say, and I would counsel Barack Obama, he really ought not take it personally as people vote. That's a very private decision, and people vote for a multitude of different reasons. And, you know, I've been involved in politics a while. I don't take it as a personal front how people vote one way or the other. Whether they vote for me or they vote against me, you know, they get to vote, and then we move on.
Lewis?
Yeah, I don't think Obama's questioning whether people have a right to vote or whatever. It's a question of he's absolutely right that when you have the other candidate saying, I'm going to tear apart and repeal and destroy everything that Obama had done, getting a Democrat elected to follow Obama is definitely important to Obama, and it's definitely going to be important to the policies of Obama. So, yeah, he's absolutely right with what he's saying. So I see absolutely nothing wrong with that.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Lewis Fortas, who is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly, and Van Mobley, an associate professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin, president of the Village of Teensville, and he writes a regular column for the Ozaki News Graphic. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're going to be focusing in on some state of Wisconsin issues when we come back. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking today with Van Mobley and Lewis Fortas. Let's move on to the U.S. Senate race. The Marquette poll showed Russ Feingold, former Democratic U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, increasing his lead over the incumbent Republican Senator Ron Johnson, 47-41%. It was 48-45 last month. How are you feeling about Feingold's chances of going back to the U.S. Senate, Lewis?
I think they're very good. I think Feingold did a very good job as a senator. I think people know that. They trust him. If you look at, dig a little deeper in that poll, you'll see they like him a lot more than they like Johnson, and they trust him a lot more than they trust Johnson. And I think Russ got caught in that 2010 Tea Party wave thing. It was also a off-year election, which in Wisconsin, the voter turnout drops off significantly in a gubernatorial year versus a presidential year. And so between that and the Tea Party wave, I think Russ just got taken down. And I was very pleased to see that he came back. There was questions of whether he would or not. And I think he's, I don't think it's a done deal by any stretch of the imagination, but I think right now Russ is in a very strong position.
Yeah, Van, you had said earlier that you felt good about Trump's chances in Wisconsin. You predicted he would take Wisconsin. What about Ron Johnson's chances of being reelected?
Well, he's behind. He's going to have to do something to shake things up, and I can give a number of things that I would counsel Ron to do. One, I think that he should come out and make a firm statement denouncing the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He's one of the few Republican senatorial candidates who's still lingering around in Never Never Land saying they're considering it. So I think he should come out and say that, you know, that's a bad deal. It is a bad deal. Second thing, goes back to what Lewis was talking about, Charlie Sykes. I think Charlie Sykes is actually, I don't know what's, you know, I'm a Republican, and Charlie Sykes is at least kind of been on this side for a while. He's kind of depressing voter turnout among sectors of the voting public that would vote for Ron Johnson. I think that has an impact. So Charlie needs to get right.
Let's talk next about the transportation budget. Governor Scott Walker released a public letter to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and asked him to find solutions to paying Wisconsin's roads, highways, and bridges. He again promised to not raise taxes or fees, but says he is open to alternatives. Voss released a public letter of his own saying that delaying projects and borrowing money does not address long-term needs, and that under Walker's plan, some projects would not be finished in their lifetimes. We're kind of running short on time, but Van, you first. What do you make of this Republican debate over highway funding or transportation funding, and what do you think ought to happen?
I think the debate is fine, and actually it's a sign of healthy Democratic, you know, activity. Everybody has different perspectives. This is the sort of thing you kind of thrash out and you would expect to have happen. The only thing that I would say as an old campaigner is, you know, can you guys wait till after the election to thrash this out? We're trying to get Ron Johnson elected. We're trying to get Trump elected. We're trying to get my friend Mike Gallagher up in the Green Bay area elected to Congress. It'd be helpful if we were all rowing in the same direction.
What are your thoughts, Lewis, on this infighting and transportation budget?
Yeah, I think this has a lot to do with 2 years from now because Robin Voss would like to be governor. And he's been going along with Walker on all his issues, and Walker's popularity is recovered a little. It came up from about, in the last poll, I think it was from 39% to about 42 or 43% approval rating, but that's still, you know, not particularly good for an incumbent. I think that Voss is trying to separate himself. I think Voss is trying to begin to differentiate his policies from that of Walker's. And I think this is just kind of the beginning of the 2018, perhaps, primary campaign.
Governor Walker this week also suggested that there could be broader implications for district attorney staffing levels if Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm continues to pursue a John Doe investigation into Walker's campaign activities. The Supreme Court shut down the investigation last summer in a 4-2 ruling. There's more details, but Lewis, what do you think of Walker hinting that district attorney staffing levels may not be funded if DA Chisholm would continue to pursue a John Doe investigation?
I mean, it certainly sounds like a threat, and it sounds like a situation if it were money and you said, okay, if you do this, I'll give you more money, and if you don't do that, I won't give you money. It almost sounds like, again, not a bribe, but certainly a threat. I think after what came out in The Guardian, where it basically shows exactly what the John Doe was trying to point out, Walker looks terrible. This is not national press. This is international press. This is, you know, and Walker, having run for president, has made himself, you know, known to beyond the borders of the United States. I mean, this is people, I'm sure, around the world are shaking their heads saying, my God, this guy is still in office. You know, why aren't they, you know, impeaching him or prosecuting him or something? And instead, Walker is saying, you know, I'm going to cut back on funds. And Schimmel, our wonderful attorney general, is saying, well, you know, totally ignoring the fact that what Chisholm was trying to prove is pretty much gotten proven by the documents that have come out. And his big thing is who made the leak? Well, whoever made the leak, thank you. And a whistleblower or a leaker or whatever you want to call him in this case is was necessary, and they did a good job.
Van?
I think this John Doe thing just goes on and on and on, and it much ado about nothing.
Well, since we are running out of time, let me ask you both about this other story. Wisconsin is joining 20 other states suing the Obama administration over federal overtime rules that are supposed to start in December. It would double the threshold at which workers are eligible for overtime pay, and it would affect 4.2 million employees. Attorney General Brad Schimmel said states should set their own priorities and not be forced to take directives from Washington. He also warned of potential layoffs and reduced services. Van, you first. Is Schimmel right, or do you think that this OT overtime rule would be good for Wisconsin?
I think Schimmel is right on the money, that this is just an example of regulatory overreach within the federal government by the Obama administration. And also, it's just sort of, you know, telling other people what to do, being a busybody. If the local states would like to up the minimum wage, then they should do so, and all these things are certainly, I think, subject to people on a local level having a discussion and then making their own decisions.
Very briefly, Lewis, on the lawsuit over the overtime new rules.
Okay, I own a company. I am an employer. I have no problem with this. But real quickly, if I may, it's interesting. In the old days, Wisconsin used to kind of team up with the states that had high employment, had high wages, had high education. Now Schimmel's teaming up with, you know, Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina. And these are the new peers of Wisconsin after 6 years of the Walker administration. Instead of the states that are forward-looking, progressive, high-income, low unemployment states, and that's sad when you see us, you know, kind of going down rather than up.
Can you give us less than 30 seconds each? What should Lewis first, Hillary Clinton, do in Monday's debate to make an impression?
I think she should be Hillary, the real Hillary, and just go out there, show her knowledge. She's a good debater, and I think she has to hold Trump accountable for all these things he has said that have not been truthful.
And what does Trump have to do, Van?
Trump is, he's not, I would agree that he's not as skilled as Hillary in some of these debate formats, but actually I think he'll do a great job. He should tell the American people what he's going to do for them. It's going to be he's going to make America great again, and then he should remind them of what Hillary has done more so than she said.
And we have to leave it there. Thank you both very much for being with us, Van Mobley and Lewis Fortas. Thanks to Bill Martins and Kai Brito for producing the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.